We meet the new president of Miami-Dade College. Also, Elon Musk believes tunnels could answer South Florida's traffic woes. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Madeline Pumariega is taking the helm at one of the largest colleges in the country. She's a native and an alum. What are her plans, though, for getting the school through declining registrations and shrinking revenues? Also, more and more people are getting their COVID vaccines, but it's still nowhere near what leaders promised. So how can you get your shot? When will more be available? And finally, billionaire Elon Musk recently said that Miami can solve its traffic problems with underground tunnels? A UM engineer explains the challenges of building the system in a place surrounded by water. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, COVID-19 vaccines have been rolling out in South Florida for over a month now. Every day, more and more people receive their immunization. Some have already received their necessary second dose. But the rules on who's eligible and how they get in line can be confusing. WLRN's healthcare reporter Veronica Zaragovia joins us now. Veronica, thanks so much for the time.
Thanks so much to you, Luis.
And by the way, just want to mention, because we want to hear from you, if you've gotten your COVID-19 vaccine, tell us what the experience was like. Maybe you're still trying to get an appointment. You're still trying to get in line and all the websites tell you, oh, we're out. Tell us what that is like for you and what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go. Maybe you have a question for us. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. All right, so Veronica, I think it's been almost a month since we last talked about this, about the vaccines as they were rolling out. Healthcare workers were first in line to receive it. But right now, who's eligible? Who can get it?
Right. So aside from healthcare workers, you have staff members and residents of long-term care facilities who can get vaccinated, and then also seniors 65 and older. And then in a very few number of hospitals in our region, can you be younger than 65 and get vaccinated if you have an underlying condition? And then today we learned that all of Miami-Dade County Public School employees who are 65 and older will be eligible soon. You know, that includes teachers, bus drivers, cafeteria workers, but it's not because of their career. It's not because, you know, we've got into that next phase. It's because 65 and older, and Broward County schools are also going to be having a similar vaccination opportunity for their senior staff members.
Yeah. And we have both vaccines, right, from the two different companies that are available.
That's right. So we continue in Florida and across the U.S. to only have the Pfizer-BioNTech and the Moderna vaccines. Those are the mRNA vaccines. And we are expecting to hear soon that Johnson & Johnson will have completed its work to then submit to the FDA for review. But that's still, no specifics on that yet. So yeah, for now, we have those two vaccines.
Okay. So again, let's go back to healthcare workers, and what do we know about how many have received it? Or are they even like tracking that? Do we have a number?
Right. So the state doesn't break down its numbers by groups like professions, but I have checked, what I could find is, for instance, race, I can find age range, I can find counties, but I have checked in with Jackson Health System, for instance. They have roughly 40% of their staff who got vaccinated. And then Memorial in Broward has told me about 33%. And Memorial says every time they open up vaccine appointments for staff, they get more people interested. So those numbers might rise as people feel more comfortable.
So hold on a second. As I hear you say that, I'm thinking all of the healthcare workers still haven't been vaccinated. Is that because they're still waiting to, or because some of them choose not to?
No, it's a great question. There's people who are choosing not to, both, hospital workers as well as, for instance, the Miami Herald. Our partners recently reported that also some emergency workers had chosen not to get vaccinated. And this is a national problem where some people feel like they don't want to be guinea pigs and they want to kind of wait and see what happens, because a lot of people still haven't gotten their second dose. So they want to observe how the whole process goes. Some people have underlying health conditions and they're nervous, but the vaccines have been tested on mice, on monkeys, and on more than 70,000 humans. So they have been tested and they have gone through the typical clinical, the trials, but it was fast and that's what causes people concern.
There are a lot of people have doubts. All right. This is a fascinating story that there is no Florida residency requirement. Is that still the case? Really?
Right. So there's no residency requirement. And this week, the Governor Ron DeSantis he's been asked about this question at press conferences, and he said, well, if anything, the fact that people are coming from outside of the state shows that Florida is doing a really good job, and that's why people are coming here. So far, he hasn't been public about any effort to change that. But then, for instance, at Jackson Health System, they are asking for a government-issued photo ID now and proof of residency in the U.S., not in Florida. But this is new. And so there is some backlash that has been going on in South Florida because we've been hearing about tourists who are coming, and mm-hmm. that's a reaction to that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. So my understanding is that some Publix pharmacies, like in Palm Beach County, they have the vaccine. Granted, they ran out very quickly, and you have to wait till tomorrow to sign back up for the weekend. The stadium, the Hard Rock Stadium, also is a site. Marlins Park will become a site. Basically, where can people go to get it? Where are the locations?
They can also go to Zoo, Miami, Tropical Park, Marlins Park that you mentioned, and then many of the hospital systems, like we said, Jackson Memorial, Mount Sinai. Baptist was offering vaccination appointments, but they've recently canceled, though. That's not, you know, sometimes hospitals will come up online again and other times not. It just depends on the amount of vaccines available.
Do you need health insurance?
No, so you're not supposed to have to give insurance. And for instance, at the safety net hospitals, they're not going to ask for it. And so this is supposed to be a vaccine that's subsidized by the federal government, and it shouldn't cost anybody anything to get it. Now, I'll just quickly say that some concern is that if later on, as more people can get vaccinated, if doctors were to offer the vaccine, there's a concern that you wouldn't get charged for the vaccine per se, but then you'll get a bill for the doctor's time. And so that is something to be seen, how insurance companies are going to avoid, you know, if you'll have to pay it's just something to consider when you go to a doctor's office. But this is down the line because we're not there yet.
Yeah. Again, talking with WLRN's healthcare reporter, Veronica Zaragovia. COVID-19 vaccines available in South Florida now for more than a month. But again, getting that access has been tough for some people. Supply is limited. And you find some people are signing up to try to get it somewhere and then they run out very quickly. Find all the reporting you need, by the way, on the vaccines and a guide on where to make those appointments on our social media at WLRN Sundial or on the website, WLRN.org. And look, again, find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let us know what your story is. We'd love to hear from you. We're collecting these stories because this is going to go on for a while. And Veronica, that's the thing. It seems like it's going so slow. And I'm wondering, when are we going to get to the next phase and get past the just over 65? How about those of us below 65?
I wish I had an answer for you, Louis. I'm wondering as well, but we don't even know yet who exactly has been identified to be in that next group of people, essential frontline workers, you know, if it's going to be teachers or if it's going to be transit workers. So first we need to know who they'll be. And then because of the slowdown with just the population that had the different groups that have been approved, we really don't know how soon that will be.
Again, you mentioned a moment ago that there is still skepticism about this vaccine, and especially with minority groups, with Black and brown people. What is the state doing to address those concerns?
You know, the state is leaving it up to the more local bodies to help answer those questions. So there are different either advertise, kind of media campaigns to express that people should feel confident in these. There's also town halls that local governments are putting together. But I interviewed an epidemiology professor at the University of Miami recently who said that she spoke to her mother's black church and felt frustrated that she shouldn't have to be the one who's winging it and helping answer the questions of seniors, and that people just need somebody that they can turn to ask questions, and they don't have that.
Yeah. Do you get the sense, I don't know if you've heard from people, that they expect things will be different now. There's a new president, a new administration, and the President Biden's already mentioned that they have a goal of 100 million vaccinations in the first 100 days.
You know, the issue is that on the one hand, President Biden has said that he wants all of the vaccines to be released rather than the way it was under former President Trump, was that the vaccines would be held back until it was time to send the second dose over. And so that might make more vaccines available, but now there's some concern about then what happens to that second dose. So we don't know yet, because the reason for this slowdown is the production of the vaccines themselves. And I do know that President Biden has talked about changing the name of Operation Warp Speed, because that's what's causing some of the mistrust in terms of, like, it makes it sound that it was too fast and that corners were cut, and so that might
Yeah.
be a change. Yeah.
And a reminder to people, as we've been pointing out, that even if you get the vaccine, at least for a while, we still have to practice our social distancing and keep our masks. That's not over yet. So just to remind people, Veronica
That's right.
Zaragovia, WLRN's healthcare reporter. Thanks so much, Veronica.
Thanks so much to you. It's a pleasure.
All right. And again, follow all of her reporting on this issue on the website, WLRN.org. All right. Still to come, we're going to introduce you to the new president of Miami-Dade College, who's focused on getting her staff vaccinated. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, companies, nonprofits, and schools are all racing to access limited vaccine doses in South Florida. Miami-Dade College is one of the largest college systems in the country, with thousands of employees and tens of thousands of students. And the college is facing a drop in enrollment, which is directly hurting their budget. All of these challenges now are for Madeline Pumariega to try to deal with. She was chosen late last year to become the first female president of Miami-Dade College. As a Hialeah native, MDC alum, and former professor, she knows the area. She knows what's ahead of her. President Pumariega, it is a pleasure to have you on the program. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
And congratulations on the position and, of course, the challenges that you face coming up. I want to start with this. Let's start with the vaccine, because we were just talking about it. You've got thousands of employees that are regularly at risk of contracting the virus through their interactions on campus. How are you prioritizing who in that 65 and older bracket is getting that access first? How is this working?
So we worked on a partnership with JMH, Jackson Memorial Health System, last week, and actually we announced on Monday and started to be able to vaccine our employees that are 65 and older as early as Tuesday of last week. So I'm really pleased that we were able to build this partnership and provide access to our employees. Through our human resources department, we developed a tiered approach to employees that are in the front lines, also those employees like our faculty that are in the classroom with students, those would take priority. And right now, just aligning to what the governor has said, 65 plus, and working with within those guidelines and working within our partnership.
Yeah, but by the way, are staff required to get the vaccine? Have some chosen not to do so?
There is no requirement, and right now it's voluntarily. Some have said yes, they raised their hand and signed up right away, and others are taking more of a wait and see approach. But I don't anticipate requiring it because their doses just aren't there to be able to require that for students, faculty, or staff like we might other vaccines. I think maybe in the future, that might be something that colleges and universities along with school districts will consider. But I think we would have to have an ample supply of vaccines for us to be able to do that.
And what do you think about that? You know, it may be down the road in the future, but do you think that schools, all schools like yours, should require it?
I think we've got to leave it to the data scientists and doctors and have the CDC as well as others issue that guidance for, I think, public schools and public and private colleges and universities.
Is there a plan right now for students, especially those 65 and older, to get access to the vaccine, or is it simply the staff and the faculty?
Our initial partnership right now includes faculty and staff. I believe that as the state continues to get additional vaccines and access to vaccines, we would certainly then prioritize our students that are 65 and older. And work on that partnership and expanding that partnership as well.
You talked about your relationship with Jackson Memorial. Miami-Dade College played a critical role over the summer providing some necessary ventilators to Jackson when the cases were spiking. What else is the role for MDC in the county's efforts combating COVID-19? How else are you working with the local hospitals and local health officials?
We are incredibly proud of our long history and our partnership with our local healthcare partners and hospitals. We're the number one producer of nurses, EMTs, respiratory care, therapists. So you name it, our medical campus really leads the way in providing the workforce for our healthcare partners and our hospitals across our county.
What kind of conversations do you have with people like the new mayor, Danielle Levine-Cava, and the county's new chief medical officer, again, and how MDC kind of fits in that strategy? But how often are you talking with them?
I've been on several of the calls that the mayor has had regarding COVID-19, and our talks really are about being partners. How do we lockstep with the guidance from the experts and what the county is doing, and making sure that, for example, we've launched a partnership with Curative, and we'll be able to do testing on our campuses at the North and Kendall campus. That's a way to support the mayor's leadership, who wants to make sure that, one, we have testing available to all citizens in our county, that we abide by physical distancing and CDC guidelines, which the college is doing, and most importantly, that we're a partner in the economic recovery of COVID-19 for our community by providing workforce programs that can retool individuals that have lost their jobs. And we are also providing a scholarship and financial aid to students in our community and those that have also lost their jobs because of COVID-19 to come back to the college and earn that certificate or degree that will help them. And those are the multiple ways that we're working with the mayor.
So let's talk about some of those challenges. And you brought up one of them, the financial challenge. The folks in South Florida are facing their financial challenges, but that, of course, means that the college is facing its financial challenges. Last year, we talked with your predecessor, Dr. Rolando Montoya, about those challenges, and here's what he said.
We want to be optimistic, and we want to believe that the health conditions of the nation and the economic conditions of the nation are going to recover relatively soon. We are thinking more in terms of 2-3 months and not in terms of 6-12 months. But again, there is lots of uncertainty.
Are cuts still going to need to be made in order for the college to keep operating?
A couple of thoughts there. Number one, we are still prioritizing enrollment. We are currently down in our enrollment with the semester that started, but we're adding a series of mini term courses. We've also introduced, alongside with our faculty, an additional teaching modality that allows students to interact with their faculty member via Zoom and learn synchronously. We think that's really going to help with our enrollment efforts, as well as launching additional sections of those courses that are popular with our students. So that's one step. The second step is working with our delegation in Tallahassee. We know that the state has a shortfall in funding, so we'll be working together with them to make sure that we preserve our appropriation from Tallahassee. And then third, with the federal government also working with the CARES funding and having CARES funding help support our students and our operations. The last thing that we want to do right now is have to have any type of reduction in force. We know that folks in our community are hurting economically. So, you know, I have a priority to keep our college faculty, staff, and students physically safe from COVID-19 by abiding by all of the guidelines, but also trying to preserve their fiscal health by making right decisions at the institution and continuing to be aggressive in student enrollment and the appropriations that we need to keep the college operational and make sure that the college is positioned to be the recovery engine and the workforce engine for our community.
But you know what? I mean, look, you, like a lot of institutions across this country, got hit really hard. And you got from community colleges all the way up to some of the biggest universities in this country are going to have to make cuts. So, you know, again, with what you've lost, and we don't know how long it'll take to get that back, what are you looking at least in the near future? With staff, with services, how do you maintain that? And you're going to go to Tallahassee, but you and every other school is going to be up there with hands out. Hey, we're all in need.
So one of the things that we've done already is really frozen positions. We're in a hiring freeze. Those critical positions we've had to put on hold right now. And so that's one of the cost saving measures that we've put in place. Another cost saving measures, obviously in alignment with national experts, is travel. You know, our faculty and staff used to do, you know, travel to conferences and for professional development. That has all stopped. We've also looked at tightening our materials and support in areas where we've been able to move those support services virtually and been able to save money there as well. So we are and continue to take cost-cutting measures, and at last resort, we want to see people hurt by it. But we have immediately frozen positions and, again, taken different avenues to reduce expenditures at the college to best align the college to the budget that we have to work with.
Again, I'm talking with Madeline Pumariega, the new president of Miami-Dade College. After a year and a half long search to replace Eduardo Padron, Pumariega became the first female president of one of the largest colleges in the country. Again, you can find more on this story on our Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. By the way, you can also post a question if you'd like on our social media for the new president. How do you attract more students during a pandemic? Again, because people are facing tough times right now, and usually during tough times, during economic slowdowns, people tend to go back to school. But we haven't seen that happen so much during the pandemic. What's the strategy?
I think what we're doing is aligning our course offerings to those jobs that we know. We know, for example, technology jobs continue to increase. Those are continued opportunities for students that earn that credential, whether it's a college credit certificate or an industry certification. The cybersecurity area, artificial intelligence, all of those are still programs in incredibly popular at the college. And so we're making sure that we're increasing the sections there. We're reaching out to students that need 12 credits or less to finish up that degree and offering a financial incentive for them to come back and finish it. You know, one of the things we're cognizant of, when you think about the last economic recession the country had in 2008, 2009, when we recovered jobs, we recovered about 11.6 million jobs in our economy. 11.3 million of those jobs went to individuals with some college, with credentials beyond high school. And so we're making that case to our students and our prospective students to come back in. And this is the time to invest in your education. We're investing in them by creating rapid response credentials that they can come in and get a scholarship and earn a stipend once they earn those credentials.
And those jobs that we're training them for, I mean, are they here in South Florida, or are these students who are taking that talent and leaving, going somewhere else?
9 out of 10 of the students who earn a credential at Miami-Dade College stay right here in Miami-Dade County and work in our county. So we're not one of the colleges or universities exporting talent. We really are, again, the workforce college for our county. And again, even in healthcare, technology, and all of the areas, our students are staying right here and working in Miami-Dade County.
You know, one of the things too that's changing is a lot of us are working from home, and that may not change for some people. That may be permanent. With education, do you see virtual learning as really the future, or is this just, we're just waiting until everybody can get back into the classroom?
I believe that virtual learning will be here with us for a long time. If you think about the students in high school that will start college in the fall, for the next couple of years, they have had access to Zoom and being able to, still interact with classmates and their faculty member via a synchronous platform like Zoom or like Teams. I think that's going to continue to grow. You know, we did a lot of work around virtual education. We launched a virtual college years ago that shifted into MDC online. I think that's still going to be a teaching modality that people are going to gravitate to. But I do think that we heard from students when we did surveys, they love the interaction with their peers and with faculty. And a synchronous virtual platform gives us the opportunity to do that. And that's going to help many of our students that work and have to balance life, be able to take that extra course because they're not worried about commuting. They can do it right from home or from work.
Yeah. So this, as we mentioned, you know, and you've said this before too on WLRN, this is a coming home for you because you grew up in Hialeah, you went to MDC, you played basketball there, you were a professor. Why'd you want to come back?
I have fondly said about to whom much is given, much is expected. Miami-Dade gave so much to me. Miami-Dade College gave me an opportunity as a student. I also got to spend 20 years growing my career at the college. And for me to be able to come back and share what I've learned in a statewide role as a chancellor of the Florida college system and be able to contribute to ushering in the next era of excellence at Miami-Dade College, to be able to serve my community, the community that I grew up in, and to come back home with family and with friends really is just an opportunity of a lifetime. And I understand the seriousness of the moment and the need that the college is in to have a leader that understands the uniqueness and specialness of our community, but the implications across the state and in our nation right now. So I'm just thrilled to be back and work with the great talented professionals at the college to usher in that next era of excellence and help the college navigate this time.
Real briefly, I just wanted to end with this. Longtime president Eduardo Padron left his legacy on this institution, but now this is your job. What do you want your legacy to be? What is your vision?
You know, my legacy is to make a difference, to ensure that we put students first, that we continue to drive student success, and that we have academic excellence and are recognized as an institution making tremendous impact in our community and across our country and the world.
Madeline Pumariega, the new president of Miami-Dade College. Again, Ms. Pumariega, congratulations. Thanks for the time, and we look forward to having you back because you got a lot of challenges ahead. We want to talk about how you're dealing with them.
I would love to come back. So thank you so much, and thank you for being our voice as well.
Definitely. And again, more on the story of Madeline Pumariega and, you know, her history here in South Florida, just go to our website, WLRN.org. Well, still to come, we all know Miami-Dade's traffic problems. Could underground tunnels be the solution? Elon Musk thinks so. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. So when the richest man in the world says that he wants to revolutionize your city's transit system, what do you do? Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla, tweeted out last week his interest in developing a tunnel system under Miami to alleviate our longtime traffic woes. He's since spoken with Governor Ron DeSantis and been tweeting with Miami-Dade Mayor Danielle Levine-Cava and Mayor Francis Suarez. But anyone who's lived in South Florida knows there's one big problem with building anything underground: flooding and sea level rise. So is the plan even feasible? Jean-Pierre Bardet is a professor of engineering at the University of Miami, and he joins us now. Jean-Pierre, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Luis. It's a great pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, great to have you. By the way, I just want to pose this question to our listeners. Share your thoughts. Throughout South Florida, not just Miami, do you think tunnels would solve our problem? Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. And if not, what do you think would solve our problems for traffic? Jean-Pierre, when did you first hear about Elon Musk's idea for tunnels in Miami? When did you hear about it?
Well, very recently I heard about it. But I did hear of Elon's will to create more tunnels for his Hyperloop systems. It started in, I think he did some work in California some time ago.
Yeah.
And that's when I heard about it.
So be honest with us. Do you think that's a good idea here in South Florida?
Well, at first, yes, you could think that it's not a good idea because we have limestone, which is very porous, and we have a risk of flooding. But if you really look at the technology, you'll be amazed on what the boring company, that's the name of the company of Elon Musk, has been doing. I was looking at the numbers, the cost of tunneling per miles, and I was amazed by the fact that they can build a tunnel for $10 million a mile, which is 10 times cheaper, or sometimes 100 times cheaper than the usual price that we pay. So I think we have a lot to discover from this company.
I'm trying to figure out, look, I'm not an engineer, nor am I an expert on finances when it comes to public works projects, but how is building a tunnel cheaper than, say, building above ground rail or building above ground anything?
Well, I would say usually it's more expensive to build a tunnel than to build a bridge or some elevated structures. Tunnels are, in engineering, maybe one of the most expensive structure. Just to give you some examples, in New York, the cost of digging tunnels has exceeded $1 billion per mile.
Wow.
This is a lot of money per mile. So Alan, Elon can do it for 10 millions, 100 times, cheaper. It's really amazing.
Is it, how much of it has to do with what you're cutting through? Because obviously the ground under New York City, Manhattan, very different than the ground, here in South Florida. So is it about because it would be easier to cut through limestone?
Well, you have a good questions here. And I'd like to maybe bring the example of the tunnel in Port Miami.
Okay, the Port Miami tunnel, yeah.
Yeah, the Port Miami tunnel was built, I think, between 2010 and 2014. And I think we have learned a great deal from the construction of this tunnel. The tunnel was the construction was very challenging. It had to cross what we call coralline limestones which are very pervious and also are dissolved. So you have kind of gaps, holes in it, which makes it very challenging to support the weight and the load applied by the tunneling machine. So, but engineers managed to dig the tunnel. The cost, I think, was $650 million. Depends how you look at it, but they managed by injecting grouts, some kind of, if you want, a gel, which would fill the pockets in the limestones. And also in some segments, they use freezing. They froze the ground, created some kind of a ring around the tunnels to be bore, and preventing basically the infiltration of water, and also adding to the stability off the ground so it can be excavated safely. So we have learned a great deal, but that was a big diameter tunnel.
Yeah.
You're talking about almost a 54 feet diameter.
Yeah.
I think Elon is going to be using a smaller tunnel, maybe half of it or smaller than half. I think he can do it. We've done it here in Miami. I think we can do it again, salary.
Let's talk about, so we have an understanding of the difference because, you know, you'll hear tunnel system, but you'll also hear Hyperloop, which is another word that you'll hear linked to Elon Musk. But help us understand the difference between a Hyperloop system and this tunnel system that he proposed.
Well, the Hyperloop is basically a tube in which you put a vehicle, you lower the pressure, and so basically you eliminate the resistance from the drag on the vehicle. So the Hyperloop doesn't have to go completely underground. It's right. Usually in an urban setting where you have a lot of, I would say, right-of-ways issues, you have to cross roads and so on, that you want to go underground to avoid all these problems. So an Hyperloop system will use some of the tunnels to go under, especially when you are in the urban settings, and certainly will surface later when it's out of the urban settings, so to cut costs of the constructions. So the two are linked in a sense because you really want to get to the heart of the city to bring the loop, the Hyperloop system, close to where people live and work. So the two are linked, but I think we should see their successes are linked, to answer your questions.
Yeah. So again, as you mentioned, you know, the Hyperloop is you're talking about whether above ground or below ground. Again, really, it's a pod sort of that people get into, and it goes at very high speeds. You know, and the tunnel system, basically, you're just saying vehicles would have access to this tunnel, going around inside under the city. If you picture Miami right now, where do you think like the best place would be to put one of these tunnels? Where would we build them?
Well, that's a good question. I would have to talk to transportation engineers to better understand how we can get the bigger bang for the buck. I mean, we have a very narrow corridor in our transportation system, and we will have to position you know, the stations at critical places to alleviate the most the traffic. So it's a hard question. I wouldn't be able to understand to answer to that now.
Yeah. Again, I'm talking with Jean-Pierre Bardet. He is the professor of engineering at the University of Miami. And again, we're talking about this idea of tunnels under Miami. Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla, tweeted out recently an interest in developing a tunnel system in Miami, and that spurred some interest from Miami politicians. But again, we're asking this question, is the tunnel system feasible? Is that the best way for us to solve our transportation issues here in South Florida? And again, I'd love to hear from you what you think. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. You can email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org, and let us know what you think. Do you think that tunnel system would work, or is there something else you'd rather see? Jean-Pierre, where do you see a tunnel system like what Elon Musk is proposing? Is anywhere in the world right now that we could say, oh, look, see, there it is, and it works?
Well, you know, you can tell by my accent, I'm French. And if you go to Paris, you see tunnels all over. You don't see them, but you actually take the metro. And the metro is actually mainly made of tunnels. You go to London, and you're talking about the tubes. So tunnels are used extensively in major cities. They allow public transportation to flourish. Imagine Miami with a transportation system like London or Paris. I mean, people could actually go to the beach in 10 minutes or less. So I see that Miami could benefit greatly from tunnelings and underground transportation. So, and I think that we are now, it's a game changing, and the engineering and the economics of urban tunnelings has definitively changed. And I think we are ready for the move.
You know, let me push back with this. Obviously, you know, as we said, this is an area that floods. We're dealing with sea level rise. And we saw in New York, you know, when Hurricane Sandy hit, when the subway system gets flooded out. I mean, how would we solve that problem? Or is it just something we have to live with?
Well, we're not the only one facing this challenge. We may be at the forefront of sea level rise, but we should not forget that many, many tunnels are going underwater. I mean, an example is the Channel. The tunnel which connect France and Great Britain.
Yes.
A 50 kilometers long tunnel under the channel. Here, you know, it could be flooded easily. You just have to keep the opening of the tunnel safe from flooding. Usually the tunnel itself is safe. The lining of the tunnel are impermeable, so you don't have to worry about it. And so I think it's even manageable to have tunnels here in this in a zone which we think is threatened by sea level rise.
You know, I think about the fact that you said to you, because you're from France and you look at cities, with Paris much bigger than Miami, of course, but the way they handle transportation in Europe in general, how much of that could we do here? Because when you look at Miami, if you've been here long enough now, what do you think we could be doing better? How could we improve? And whether it's tunnels or something else, how could we improve our traffic system?
Well, you know, the key thing is what we call multimodal transportation. In other words, you'd like to be able to switch from a high-speed train to a metro in like a few minutes. So as when we're going to be able to have these connections between the fast link and the shorter link in the transportation system, I think we'll see a lot of people using public transportation. It's really enjoyable to take the train, high-speed train. You can read a book, and you can go from Paris to Orléans in maybe 1 hour. I mean, this, or you can go maybe from Miami to Orlando in a short time. So when we see that happening, we're going to see the the blooming of transportation, of public transportation in Florida.
So here's the other thing, though, is you know, maybe the mentality of the, you know, the traveler in Europe is a little different. We've had this debate in that in the United States, we love our cars. And in Florida, especially South Florida, we love our cars and we don't want to get out of them. Is that a challenge? Do you see?
Well, you see, I lived many years in Los Angeles. And Los Angeles is, when you drive a car in Los Angeles, you feel pain, I would say, not really pleasure. When you're stuck in a car for 2 or 3 hours, I think you would consider taking a train or a metro to get to work.
Mm. No. It seems like the reasonable idea, but again, it's just convincing people to get out, to get people to take the public transportation. And we do have public transit here, but we've also seen a decline. And not even before the pandemic, we saw a decline in the use of public transportation. Is it just we have to retrain people, or how do we convince them? Like, you made it sound wonderful. Yeah, like, get on a train, read a book, don't worry about the traffic. But how do we convince people of that?
Well, I think people will get to it when they see the convenience. If the system are designed to be convenient, they will be used. If they are inconvenient, people are going to go back to their cars. Convenience will drive the success.
All right. We did get a message, by the way, and we'd love to hear from you, your thoughts. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Let us know what you think of Elon Musk's idea, tunnels under Miami. And I'm going to extend that throughout South Florida. Imagine, can we build tunnels, Palm Beach County all the way down to, you know, Monroe County? Is that a good idea? Well, Stephen Ross messaged us on Facebook. He says, part of the issues of digging in South Florida is that the ground is porous and the water table is very high. Thus, any holes in the ground will fill with water. Water cannot be kept out, and thus you're talking about a concrete tunnel with a drainage system and a metal tunnel inside with a vacuum. All right. Jean-Pierre, what do you say to Stephen's point? You said that there are ways around it, but it could get expensive, right? How do you dig these big tunnels? Again, trying to keep water out all the time.
Well, as I mentioned before, in the Miami tunnel, the Port Miami tunnel, the companies, I think, that was Bouygues, use different techniques depending on the conditions they encountered to basically to mitigate the issues with the pockets of the gaps in the rock, which are due to the rock being dissolved. They injected grouts. I understand they injected 65,000 cubic meter of grouts just to fill those pockets. So basically, they created a stronger material. In order to avoid the infiltration of water, around the face of the tunneling boring machine, they use cold. They injected basically tubes with very cold liquid salt solutions and froze basically the ground and created like a big ice cube in which they were able to excavate. Now, once the tunnel lining is installed, there are no more issues because those tunnel linings, which are coming after the tunneling machine, are pretty strong.
Yeah. So once the tunnel is done, keeping the water out is easy, unless, of course, you have to worry about the openings. That's what you said earlier. It's making sure the water doesn't get in through the openings and exits. Let me just finish this with this because you mentioned it a second ago. High-speed rail. That requires a very different type of construction of rail. But for Florida, for the state of Florida, as big as it is, what do you think is better? If you had the ability to set up our system, is it tunnels? Is it more roads? Is it high-speed rail? What do you think? Big challenge.
It's a big, big question, and I'll try to answer it to the best of my knowledge. I think it's usually driven by needs. If we find point A and point B needs to be connected with high speed, then maybe high speed rail would work. This Elon Musk solutions has been considered also for very long distance. It may be even faster if it works. So far, we don't have really examples of high speed achieved by their technology. Yeah. So in short answer, the solutions are coming, but I think what will create the push is when people see that there is a need for it.
Absolutely. Jean-Pierre Bardet, he is the professor of engineering at the University of Miami. Jean-Pierre, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It was great talking with you. Thank you.
Definitely. And interesting, maybe the tunnels will work. He says maybe they'll work. We heard from some of you, like Renata LaRoque on Twitter. She says, above ground and make it a tourist attraction. We have a flat state, which makes above ground so much easier, and it would be a delight to see sunsets from an elevated rail. We also heard from Delaware Charles Blue. Traffic congestion could be reduced in South Florida by using a variety of public policy options. Yes, we definitely need more vehicle tunnels in South Florida. We have two, one in Fort Lauderdale and one in Port Miami. We also heard from George C. Paletas. He says, improving traffic requires getting cars off the road and investing in public transportation or walking or biking. Tunnels are great if for public transportation, but adding roads underground only adds more cars. That's a good point. Well, that's our program for this Thursday, January 21st. Coming up next week on the program, we're going to get an update on the legislature's plan for addressing the coronavirus ahead of this session, plus a look at the issue of immigration under the Biden administration and the DACA program. And finally, a documentary called Some Kind of Heaven takes viewers into the world of the villages. All of that coming up next week. I'm Luis Hernandez. Have a wonderful Friday, a great weekend. Be safe, be good to each other. We'll talk to you live on Monday.